Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. When we think of the word health, we tend to think of the individual, my health, or yours. But there's another kind of health, the public health. That kind of health has major consequences for us as individuals and for our communities. The spread of infectious disease, infant mortality, adult life expectancy, teen suicide, chronic illness, and more. Government agencies have major responsibility in this area, and in Montana that includes the State Department of Health and Human Services. Here to discuss this are Lindsay Kvaruchka, Public Health System Improvement Coordinator, Emily Epperson, Health Education Specialist, and George Burns, Citizen Volunteer for the Stepping On Program. Many thanks to you all for joining us on Home Ground. Lindsay, let's start with you. Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
Well, I grew up here in Montana, in Billings, Montana. And my dad has worked he actually just retired after working for Hardy Construction for 43 years, and my mom worked for the university there.
What led to your interest in public health?
I actually got a degree in business and wrote a grant that got me my first job at the local health department in Yellowstone County, which is now Riverstone Health.
And when was this?
This was in 2005. It was my second job out of college.
Okay, and how has it been for you? And if I'd asked you in 2005 what working in public health might have felt like, looked like, been like, and now you're doing it at a fairly high level, as a matter of fact, from your title, any surprises?
Yes and no. I think I've learned so much more being at the state level. I'm really grateful, though, for my experience working at the local level, being able to see the citizen impact. At that time, I got to work in a suicide prevention coalition. I got to work with members of the community, and I got to work with different coalitions as far as cancer control. One of the main roles that public health plays in the community is really mobilizing people and being a convener of partners, because public health really doesn't have a lot of resource. So we need to reach out and bring the community together. And that's one of the main roles. And I think Riverstone Health does a great job of that. And in their community, they have two hospital CEOs and then the CEO of Riverstone that have formed what's called the Alliance to really come together and look at health issues in their community and then address them together in a coordinated effort. And so having that experience was just second to none. And then to be able to come to the state level and work with other local health departments across the state has been really valuable.
What did you take away that you learned that you say would be important to you now?
I think that experience really taught me the value of coordination and collaborating with community partners.
You also said public health does not have words like much in the way of resources. What do you mean by that?
I think especially I work from a citizen perspective. I work thinking of myself as a stakeholder. And I try not to approach my job in government as saying I just need more money and I could do more, but to say we have limited resources. How can we do the most with them and really build that public benefit, maximize the use of those resources?
In layman's language, what do you do now in your job?
In my job, I am actually working across the state to help local health departments become accredited, which all of us, I think, understand as reach a standard of practice.
Okay, that's acceptable, deemed by some authorities to make sense and be competent.
Exactly.
All right. Somebody listening to that might say, that sounds pretty dull. What would you say? You clearly don't feel so because we've talked on the phone. You're excited about your
right.
job.
Tell I me am. Why. I see public health, the best definition that I enjoy, we are health strategists. How can we look at the needs of a population and meet them? So when you think of immunizations or policy work, those are things that can have a really big bang for your buck, so to speak.
Give me an example of whether it's a immunization or something else that I can understand.
Sure.
And how your role helps improve it for the ultimate recipient.
Sure. So we are working to help health departments across the state have a standard of practice where they understand how to deliver evidence-based or public health. So in other words, interventions that we know work, programs that we know work in the community. And the everyday citizen might recognize that as something like the Clean Indoor Air Act. They have someone in their county in Montana that's working to make sure that that is followed so that when they go to restaurants, not only can they trust that the food is safe and that it's been inspected, but the air that they're breathing is clean. And if they're a worker in those restaurants, they don't have to breathe secondhand smoke either.
Let me just get one thing clear in my own mind. Public Health and Human Services, if I understand correctly, it's almost like two departments. There's Medicaid, SNAP, the nutritional program, other children's services on the human services side. And the public health side is roughly what percentage of the employees, if we try to break it down simply?
It would be about 1/12 of the agency. So if the agency has 12 divisions that vary, one of those divisions is the public health and safety division.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking about Montana's Department of Public Health and Human Services, and more specifically, the part that deals with the public's health. Emily Epperson knows something about that. She's a health education specialist. We met on an airplane, had an interesting conversation, and that resulted in this program. Thank you for joining us, Emily.
Thank you, Brian.
Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do, Emily?
I grew up in North Georgia, just below the Blue Ridge Mountains. And my mom is a home economics teacher for middle school. And my dad owns his own business selling windows and doors and trim, which I had the special opportunity of working for him.
You learn anything during those summers?
I did.
What?
I did a lot of their computer work, but I also learned how to interact with people that I maybe wouldn't have otherwise interacted with. Just from being in the office and being a customer relations person, it was really valuable experience.
Valuable why?
It allowed me to interact positively with everyone that I came across and helped me to further my optimistic personality and really try and find the best in an interaction with someone, even if it was a conflict of some kind. And it has really allowed me to, I've really been able to transfer those skills in all the jobs I've done.
And education for you?
I did both my bachelor's and my master's degrees at the University of Montana in Missoula.
How'd you find out about Montana? We were in North Carolina there or something like that.
I did a missions trip out in Fort Peck after my first year of college in Georgia, and I loved Montana, so I moved to Missoula.
And how did you get into public health work?
Public health work found me. My initial profession was as a certified athletic trainer, so I worked individually with athletes on injury prevention and rehabilitation. My master's degree work was in community health, so I did a lot of work with how do we identify what our target population, what the people need to improve their health. And the public health position that I found with the Department of Public Health and Human Services was the right fit at the right time, and it's been very rewarding and really eye-opening for me to be able to work with this program and my previous work.
Now remind me what you do. What does a health education specialist in your case do?
Well, I work specifically with the Nutrition and Physical Activity Program, and we work as a program overall to make it easy for Montanans to be healthy where they live, work, learn, and play.
Okay, that sounds like a well-rehearsed phrase, make it easy for them to be healthy, et cetera, et cetera. How do you make it easy for me to be healthy?
We work on a primary prevention model. So we try and interact with the public before they have chronic illnesses or injuries. We try and improve access to healthy nutrition. We try and spread education about what that looks like. We also try and improve options for physical activity for anyone from the cradle to the grave.
Give me some specific examples. Healthy food, I think you said. exercise or activity. Tell me nuts and bolts. What are we talking about?
So with our early care and education facilities, so we're talking 0 to 5-year-old children, whether they're in preschool or in a daycare.
Okay.
We work to offer trainings in person and online that will assist the teachers or the providers to improve physical activity opportunities for the children during the day, during their lessons, to keep them active, and to also improve their healthy nutrition options while they're there in the daycare during the day.
Those are interesting concepts, but they're concepts to me. How do you actually implement them with real people?
We find the experts, and we bring them in. We make sure that the people that we work with that are going to deliver this expert information are there. And then they teach them all they need to know to be successful. And specifically with the early care and education facilities, in May we did a training where our instructors learned how to incorporate physical activity and nutrition, so making sure the kids have more options for activity to get up and move while they're learning, and to learn more about food, actual vegetables and fruits, and what's native to Montana, and how to have fun while eating them. So we just try and connect people that already know this information to the public that we work with so that it's a seamless integration.
I know from our conversation on the plane that you're enthusiastic about your work. Why?
I think we all have the capability to make good choices for our health and for the health of those around us. And I feel like it's my job to put those resources out there as best as possible so people can access them and they can turn to us when they have questions or need clarification. I just think that we all have the capability to be successful in our health, and I hope that the work that the Nutrition and Physical Activity Program does makes that possible for anyone, no matter where they are in their life cycle or where they are in their readiness to make a change.
I know that sort of teaching of skills is hard to measure in terms of the ultimate consequences for the recipient. How many more kids are eating, how many more vegetables, etc., and all these other things that you're involved with. Do you think it's effective? Do you think it makes a difference? And why do you think so, if so?
We are at a time in our nation and in our culture where health is at the forefront of everyone's mind. Lots of money gets spent on chronic diseases and illnesses. Lots of money is spent on commercials. We see it every day, promoting health, promoting medications. The program that I work for really works to promote lifestyle changes that can decrease those costs, whether it's to the taxpayer or to the individual citizen themselves. So the work that we do, although difficult because it involves lifestyle and behavior change, is very rich in purpose. And as long as we can continue to put that information out there and reach our citizens and they know that it's available to them when they're ready, it will make a difference.
George Burns, where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
I grew up in Butte. I was also born in Butte. Both of my parents were bookkeepers. I never got that skill, and
I've never had anyone on this program in 18 years, both of whose parents were bookkeepers.
Here I am. One in the private sector, one in government.
So you grew up there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to school, college?
I went to school at Carroll. I graduated from Carroll.
In
longer
what?
Ago than I could imagine. Philosophy.
Let me ask you, when you left Butte to go to Carroll, what one or two key values did you have that still stick with you?
I had the value of altruism, and I still have that. I like to help people, particularly when it's somewhat tangible. And I was not very outgoing, and I was kind of shy. Not that that's a value. That was something that needed to be changed, and I think I've changed it somewhat.
Okay, let me just go back to the altruism. Any thoughts about where that came from? Butte's known as a caring community. Was it that or family?
I think that was part of it, yes. And my family also was very much like that. And the people I grew up around in the neighborhoods and people took care of one another.
And now majoring in philosophy, after you got your, did you graduate with a degree in philosophy?
I did, yes.
Okay, so if I asked you what you learned in that educational experience that you didn't know before you got there, what would you say?
I think I learned how to read a book and make some logical conclusions. I think I learned that.
After college, what?
After college, I went to the seminary and became a priest, and then did some graduate school in the Midwest.
And how was being a priest for you as an experience? How long were you a priest?
Oh, I was a priest for a long time, and it was a very good experience, actually.
I'm tempted to ask why.
Why it was a good experience?
Yes.
Because there was such a wide variety of helping people and doing things that enable them to help themselves.
How did you get involved as a volunteer in the Stepping On program? And part of that question is, what is the Stepping On program?
The Stepping On program is designed to give people, mostly elderly people, self-confidence so that they can maintain better physical balance and avoid falling or injuring themselves in certain ways. I got into it by falling myself. I slipped, I call it the great grapefruit fall. I slipped coming out of my garage on the ice, carrying a bag of grapefruit, which went flying all over the parking lot. And as I was rather embarrassed gathering up the grapefruit, I discovered I'd hurt myself, so my rib had cracked or something. And at that time, I was also, and still do, working as a senior companion for the local program of senior companions.
Senior companion means you help a senior,
yes,
who has difficulties?
Yes, I'm a companion to several seniors, and I help them weekly. We have one appointment a week. Usually I drive them to various places. But one of these people wanted to do Stepping On. So I took her to Stepping On, and then I got involved in it myself, and she quit. And so I stayed and went through the whole session, seven sessions, and then they asked me to become a peer leader. So that's how I've been involved.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking about programs directed by the state's Department of Public Health and Human Services, specifically public health programs. Before we continue to discuss the Stepping On program, the Senior Companion program is distinct. If anybody in the listening audience happens to be interested, how would they find out about it?
The person could call the Rocky Mountain Development Corporation and ask for Tammy, and she will give them all the information that they need on the program.
Okay, Rocky Mountain Development Corporation is in what town?
It's here in Helena, sorry. Yeah.
Okay, so Stepping On, people have balance problems, they're prone to fall. Tell us about it.
Well, I think as people age, balance becomes a little more difficult for them. And this program is designed to assist them through a various series of exercises to assist them in keeping their balance. And we bring in a number of professionals to help us strategize with the group on how to keep balance in their daily lives. And if they fall, what is the best way to get up? And people managing their drugs and pharmacological stuff. And also eye health and what to do to make sure you can see well. And one of the most important things that I observed and continue to is we bring a physical therapist in, and that physical therapist will ask for volunteers and say to the person, lay down on the ground. And then he will say to the person, now, how do you get up? Hmm. Well, we all find it's not so hard to get down, but getting up sometimes can be a problem. And then he will get down and literally show the person what they have to do to get up when they're on the ground, if in fact they tripped in their home or something.
For me, I haven't fortunately yet had any balance problems I've noticed. It's first, I mean, obviously I see people have balance problems, but what's hard for me to imagine is what you can teach somebody to cope with a balance problem. Obviously, Stepping On does teach people to cope and reduce the likelihood of falling, fair?
Yes.
So what do they do?
We teach exercises like one step in front of the other, standing on one leg, going upstairs and downstairs, the proper ways to go up a hill and down a hill.
I mean, the proper ways would mean how widely you separate your feet, you flex
your knees,
that sort of stuff.
If you're going up a hill, instead of going straight up the hill or straight down, you go transit across the hill up and down. Not up and down, but across.
Zigzagging, sort
of. Yes, yes.
Okay, switchback, I'd call it, in a mountain trail.
Right, that's exactly right.
Okay, now I've got the general picture, but what do you do? You've been trained to run these or direct these or work with these classes.
First of all, I'm kind of like a teacher aide. There is a person who is in charge of the class, and I assist that person. She's the main teacher.
Okay.
I have a good deal of background as a facilitator, and sometimes I basically facilitate groups if we get into smaller groups, or to keep the conversation going across the room. Some of the things we do is, for example, we help people use how to put on weights so that when they walk, they can, you know, have a better experience walking. We also use walking sticks, canes, crutches, those sort of things. And I generally assist people in using those and, you know, getting them on and off as they need.
Typically, how many people in a class? And I'm thinking there's a professional and then a volunteer. So.
Yes, and we usually, the class is limited to 12, and we usually fill the class.
And how do people find out about where these classes might be if they're interested?
They usually appear in the newspaper, what's going on around the community. And they can tell them at the RMDC, the Rocky Mountain Development Corporation, is where they could find this information.
And that's the same outfit you mentioned before.
Yes, it is.
Lindsay?
The neat thing about the Stepping On program, it sounds very individual-based, but the role that public health plays in bringing that program to individuals in a community is that looking at the data, looking at health and what was taking place in our state, we really saw a lot of 60-year-old and older citizens of the state that when they have a fall, that usually tends to be the start of a series of other health issues.
Right.
So where public health comes in is we identify that need and then try to find something that works to address it.
Very important point, because preventing things from happening that have cascade effects makes eminent sense, whether it's Emily's nutritional program or breastfeeding children or the Stepping On program. But it's hard to prove preventing something that then doesn't happen, something bad. So I want to ask you, how is it in the legislature getting funding for these activities? Because if you wear a legislator's hat, say, prove to me this works. What's the dynamic?
A lot of it's philosophical. You know, some people just have that innate belief that this works. Prevention works. We know it works. I don't know anyone that really doubts that. But you're absolutely right. We have to be accountable for what we do and does it work or not. And I think that as public health, we have to do a better job sometimes at collecting data to prove that it works, because we might not have those 10 to 30 year outcomes right in front of us. But what we do with Stepping On is we ask participants at the beginning, what was your confidence level about falling? And then we ask at the end. So we can collect different pieces of information that can show and demonstrate success.
One of the things that I think I should mention is that following the 7-week course that these people take, 1 month later and 3 months after that, there is a follow-up visit, or either a physical visit to their home or a telephone visit, that actually goes through and helps them determine what, if anything, the program did to help their self-confidence about the balance issues. So there is a bit of follow-up to it.
Lindsay, back to you. You oversee this and a bunch of other programs, correct?
I work with them. I don't oversee them, but yes.
Okay. But in terms of this kind of data collection, if I'm a legislator, tough budgeting, nobody likes to raise taxes, blah, blah, do you have experience, either direct or what you hear from your colleagues, about how effective is this data that you collect in convincing people to fund your program? It sounds, when you say it's 1/12, staff-wise and budget-wise, it would be a lot less, because some of these programs take federal money, like Medicaid, for example. So that would warp the budget side more so. But, I mean, I'm really kind of trying to get a sense for how receptive is the legislature as a whole to the effectiveness of prevention and that being translated into adequate funding to do the jobs that need to be done?
They're receptive to data. They want to know what things cost and what the result was. I have to say, though, Brian, in Montana, there is most of the public health interventions, including the Stepping On program that we're talking about today, are federally funded. We apply for grants from the Centers for Disease Control. There's a very, if you look at our budget as a whole for the public health portion, only about 20% of it is state funded. Correct. So, for example, there's very little state money for injury prevention.
I don't know what injury prevention is.
For example, motor vehicle accidents, slips, trips, and falls, occupational injury.
Okay, let me just ask you quickly. You're saying there are proven effective strategies to prevent some of these injuries?
Yes.
And why is it important to prevent them other than preventing people from hurting themselves? Is there some long-term?
Absolutely. And it contributes to the overall cost of healthcare, which we know is a huge issue in our state and our country.
Okay, and you're saying there's no state money for this?
There's very little.
So as someone that follows politics, I'd say if there's little or no state money, the state legislators aren't buying the effectiveness of these programs, or they're just too quote-unquote frugal to pay for something that might save money in the long run. George, what would you say about that hypothesis of mine?
First of all, I think it's correct. The hypothesis is correct, and so it's somewhat consonant on those of us who work in these programs and who are able to do this to try and change that situation, where we would therefore be receiving more state funding for it.
Change it how?
Well, I was about to say by getting people to the ballot box. I think that means that what we have to do is get the message out, the message of the effectiveness of some of the programs. And if the effectiveness of the program is widespread, then there would perhaps be more willingness on the part of legislators to provide more funding to expand the programs.
Lindsay, Emily, and George, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.